ॐ शुक्लां भरदहं विष्णुं शशिवर्णं चतुर्भुजं प्रसन्नवदनं ध्यायेत् सर्वविघ्नोपशान्तये। ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम्। ॐ So we have done up to 140th Nama of Lord Vishnu, Chatur Bhujaha. Chatur Bhujaha means one who has four hands. So we have already seen Shankh, Chakra, Gada, Padma is what he holds in four different hands. Shankh, Chakra, Gada, Padma. Padma indicates the goal, ultimate goal, Atma, the peace, or the self within. And whoever is doing actions which are against the Atma, then the conch pricks you. If you don't listen to the conch and continue doing such activities, the gada, which indicates the noxious shocks of life, that comes into effect. And then even that, if you don't listen to and change your path, change to righteousness, then the chakra, which is the ultimate total destruction. So this whole idea is in all these chaturbhuja. What is it that is being indicated? That is, the human being who has the potential to get back to the self is to be directed towards the self through all different ways. So, in one hand, he shows the padma, that is your ultimate goal. You better get back to the self. So anything and everything that he does through upholding the laws is only to make us get back to the self. So Chatur Bhujaha, that is what is indicated in this Nama, which is the 140th Nama. Now let's get on to the next verse, which talks about 141 to 49th Nama. Brajishnur bhojanam bhokta sahishnur jagadadijaha अनगो विजयो जेता विश्व योनि पुनर्वसुः प्राजिष्णुर्भोजनं भोक्ता सहिष्णुर्जगदादिजः अनगो विजयो जेता विश्व योनि पुनर्वसुः ब्राजिष्णुः ब्राजिष्णुः मीन्स वन हु इज द प्योर ल्यूमिनोसिटी द रेडिएंट द सेल्फ इज ऑमनिशिएंट रेडिएंट इट इज self-effulgent. It doesn't require another light source to enliven it. It is that which enlivens everything. It's like sun above. The sun is light. It doesn't require any other light for it to be illumined. Similarly, he says, Brajishnuhu, self-effulgent consciousness that illumines everything. It is not borrowed light. It is original light. That's what it means. Brajishnuhu. In our case, the jivas are all borrowed light. So with the intelligence that I am speaking, the intelligence with which you are understanding, all this intelligence is borrowed intelligence. Whereas in the case of Atma, it is Brajishnuhu. It is self-effulgent. It's original light. It is self-knowledge. It's all-knowing principle. So it is the light of all lights that illumines everything. The darkness is illumined by light, and that light is illumined by this original light. Therefore, Brajishnuhu, the ultimate source. So anywhere you find anything shining, any intelligence, any valor, any brilliance, anything that you see, it is a reminder of that original source which is being reflected in that particular jiva or being. So therefore, the moment somebody appreciates you, oh, what an intelligent person you are, it's an opportunity for you to remind yourself of the Atma that enlivens your intelligence. Not to become arrogant. So any intelligence anywhere you see, it's an opportunity for you to bow down to that intelligence which is actually behind the intelligence that you see. So Vrajishnuhu. And then Bhojanam. Bhojanam means food. But here in the context here, Bhojanam means Prakriti or Maya. Annam, food, is referred to here as the Prakriti which is being enjoyed by the Lord Purusha. So the Lord is the Bhokta and Bhojanam is the Prakriti, and that Prakriti is also of Vishnu. Prakriti, Maya is the inherent power in Brahman or Ishvara. So Ishvara is none other than Maya Sahita Brahman. So Maya is a power inherent in Ishvara, the Lord. So that Maya which comes out as Prakriti, Hiranyagarbha, and it comes out as this entire creation, Virat Purusha, is what is referred to as Annam, material, the food. And who is enjoying that food? Bhokta, which is the Purusha sitting inside us. So as he, Purusha, enjoys the Prakriti, is called the enjoyer or Bhokta. That is the 143rd number. So Vrajishnuhu, the shining, self-effulgent, illumining factor, the original illumining factor, which is what has come out as the food, Bhojanam, Prakriti, Maya, and who is enjoying it? Sitting inside Purusha, the pure consciousness. Purusha, I told you, has different meanings. One who resides in the Puri, Purusha. One who resides in Puri, the city, the indwelling, the indweller, pure consciousness that is reflected through the cities is called Purusha. Also, Purayati iti Purusha, which means that which pervades everything. So that pervading the Bhojanam and enjoying it is called Bhokta. So really speaking, the subject is Atma. But unfortunately, when it is reflected, that's where we get deluded. That's all Vedanta is talking about. So, you are able to see, hear, smell, taste, touch. And a lot of people have, of course, you need to, you know, keep yourself as fit as you can. And if you can, you know, if you retain your original teeth, even after you've become 70, 80, it's good. And if you can see without the glasses, like I'm using the glass, it's good. It's all good. But then to have the pride as if you are experiencing all that, that is madness. So this term Bhokta tells us the real self, which is the subject inside, is the real enjoyer from that point of view. So therefore, he is the Bhokta, Purusha. And then Sahishnuhu. Sahishnuhu, he suppresses asuras, various asuras, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, so many asuras. He Sahishnuhu, in the sense, he first, straight away he doesn't go and attack them. He gives them time, you know. So, and ultimately he subdues them. So he endures all the disregards. In fact, when Lord Krishna, you know, Krishna Avatara, what's his name? I forget his name. Shishupala, correct. Shishupala hurled abuses at Sri Krishna. He was patient. The story says almost 99 abusers he took. And then he came down on him. So he gives lot of big ropes of what it means. Sahishnuhu. Asura. Sura means good. Asura means the opposite of it. So one who is desirous. It's out of desire we do all the nonsense. Do you understand? And when will the desire come? The desire will come when there is a lack. So, when you find people who are greedy, oppressing, creating havoc around, coming down to destroy, they are actually lacking something inside. Those who are paripurna, those who are full, those who are strong, they don't do any such activity. It doesn't happen in them. It's only people who are lacking. They are destructive. There's something is wrong there. You're not all right. So, this power mongers, war mongers, wealth mongers, have nothing to do with wealth. Wealth mongers, you know, this hoarding, there is something wrong inside. There's a deep lacuna. They are not at all happy in spite of so much of hoarding, so much of power. There's constant fear that their power could be taken away by somebody. So they do all kinds of things to retain that power. So, Sahishnu, he has no such thing, he is paripurna. So, he is patient with all the disregards of the Asuric people, you know. He endures all disregards. Then, finally, he comes down on them to get them back on track. Because anything that goes to the extreme, there has to be a balance, you know. So, Sahishnu, he suppresses Asuras. So many Asuras are there. Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, many more, you know. So all of them he suppresses to maintain the balance and establish dharma. That is another nama of Lord Vishnu. Jagadadijaha. One who manifested as Hiranyagarbha by himself at the beginning of creation. Hiranyagarbha, as I told you, is the total mind. Remember that. Total causal body is called Ishvara. Total mind is called as Hiranyagarbha. Right? So, when Ishvara manifests or allows the Maya to manifest, first it manifests at the subtle level. So the subtle bodies, all the subtle bodies put together, it's called total mind. That's the Hiranyagarbha. That Hiranyagarbha is that which came first. So he says, Jagadadijaha, Adi. The Adi of the Jagat, which is Hiranyagarbha. So that is what is referred to as Mahavishnu. Here with his Nama, Jagadadijaha. So he first manifested as Hiranyagarbha. And the Hiranyagarbha is Mahavishnu himself. Anaga. Anaga means sinless. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna refers to Arjuna as Anaga, sinless self. He doesn't give in to desire straight away. He doesn't allow his actions to be overpowered by desire. He questions whether it is dharmic, whether it's right, and something that he ought to do. He questions that. So sinless. Sin refers to vasana, technically. So, vasanas, ignorance, non-apprehension, all these are the sin. The root of any sin is the vasana. So, sinless means, desireless means, thoughtless means, vasanaless. So, Brahman, Atman, Vishnu is all knowledge. Being all knowledge, there is no ignorance in Brahman. So Brahman is pure consciousness, beyond ignorance, beyond any sin, beyond vasana. Zero vasana. When you reach a state of no vasana, you reach the Atma. So therefore, Vishnu is called as Anaga, sinless. See, like I think I mentioned this in the last class, I'm not sure. When you get closer and closer to fire, any source of fire, let's say there is a furnace in a factory, you're getting closer and closer to the factory or to the furnace, your body starts becoming hot, isn't it? Finally, if you enter the fire, you will become fire. Similarly, as you get closer and closer to Vishnu, the pure consciousness, these are the qualities that will reflect in you. So, even though a person who's realized the self is living in the samsaric world, the vasanas are not there in him or her. So untainted by the vasanas, though residing amidst the samsara, sinless, anaga. Though Vishnu pervades the world, And because he pervades the world, he gives life to this world. So the life that you see, he says that in the Bhagavad Gita also. I am the one who comes through the sun to the moon, and through the sun and the moon to the earth, and cooks the vegetation. I am the one in the jivas as Vaishvanara, the hunger. And digesting that food, sustaining life on earth. So that life principle is Vishnu. So therefore, sinless, anaga. Though the Vishnu enters the world and gives life to it, he remains sinless. So what we learn from this Nama is, when we gain this knowledge, even though we enter into this samsara and live in this world, we remain untainted. This is called the technique of living. Vedanta is a technique of living. Vedanta is not a knowledge which asks you to divorce yourself from the world. Give up the world and go to some mountain peak and then sit there where there is nobody and remain in peace. That's not what Vedanta is talking about. Yes, some sages and saints did that, for they were meditating and giving their revelations through the meditation to this universe. So they were also serving, but from a different way. It's like a scientist going into the laboratory and not coming out and contacting the world. But all the findings in the laboratory was for the welfare of the mankind. So few people did that. They were not running away from the world. But their revelation, when understood correctly, gives you that technique whereby you may contact the world, but you will remain sinless. That's what is the real effect that you will get when you really digest this knowledge Vedanta. You will go around, meet people, go through, live life like anybody. But you will not allow the joys and sorrows to stick to you. The pleasures and pains to stick to you. Honor and dishonor, censure, praise, nothing will affect you. You don't develop any vasana. You come back as you went. Can you come back without getting influence? Can you come back without getting conditioned? We are all like Abhimanyu. We know how to get in. We don't know how to come back without getting conditioned. Every experience is conditioning us. We are constantly being tied with various conditionings. So Vedanta teaches us how to enter, enjoy, but remain unconditioned. Never allow the material world to condition. Sinless, anaga. Vijayaha. Vijaya means one who is victorious. Victorious, vijayaha. Excelling in everything. In wisdom, in dispassion, in greatness, omnipotent, omniscient. That is vijayaha. One who excels in, when it comes to vairagya, he excels. Absolutely detached. Zero dependence on the world. And the same thing on the other side is the wisdom. When you have the wisdom, you understand that essentially this world has no fit for substance. It is all impermanent aspect. Everything is passing, fleeting phenomena. Nothing here is permanent. Therefore, once you gain that wisdom, automatically what will happen is you will be detached. You will have no passion. In the sense, the mind is not craving. Mind is not dependent on what the world offers. Why would you be interested in something that is impermanent, passing and fleeting? So the greatness of a person is living that knowledge, wisdom, by which not getting involved in anything that the world offers. That's the beauty. If you understood Vedanta, if you gain wisdom, then automatically you will be dispassionate. So dispassionate in the sense, you will continue doing your duties. You will continue doing your activities in this world. But you have no interest whatsoever in what the world has to offer. Because you understand that it is impermanent. It's not permanent. So Vijayaha. And then Jeta. Jeta is one who is victorious over beings. Meaning one who transcends all beings. All our experiences are conditioned experience. Ours is not an unconditioned experience. All conditioned. So Jetaha, he always surpasses the beings. The beings are born, they go through disease, decay and death. Whereas the pure consciousness is beyond birth, beyond disease, decay and death. So Jeta means one who transcends all beings. One who is always victorious over beings, superior to all beings. Waker, dreamer and deep sleeper. They are conditioned by the respective world. Whereas the pure consciousness is not conditioned by anything. It transcends everything. So, Jeta, Vishvayonihi, the universe, the womb of the universe, the source of the universe. Yonihi means the womb, source. So therefore, Vishvayonihi, the source of the universe, the cause, the very cause for all this is Vishnu. Then Punar Vasuhu, one who dwells again and again in the bodies as the Jiva. Punaha means again, repeated dweller, that's what it means. He again and again dwells in the bodies as an individual self, Kshetragni. He studied in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Kshetrajnam chapimam vitti sarva kshetreshu bharatai. So, Kshetrajnam, the pure consciousness, which is the one which is the indweller in all these various species. When the body is given up and a new body is taken up, who is the indweller? Krishna. So, Punar Vasuti. Again and again dwells in the bodies as the individual self. Next verse. Upendrova manapramshu amohashu chirurjitaha apindra sangraha sargodhvitatmaniyamo yamaha upendrova manapramshu amohashu chirurjitaha apindra sangraha sargodhvitatmaniyamo yamaha upendraha. Indra means younger brother of Indra. This is Vamana, a dwarf incarnation. He was the younger brother to Indra. Their parents were Kashyapa and Aditi. So, Upendraha refers to Vamana. Who is the younger brother to Indra? Deva. Deva, the lord of Devas. So, the Upendra is also the avatara of Mahavishnu only. And he directly refers to him as Vamana in the next nama. Vamana. He is the one who took that form of that young boy. You know, he came as young boy to conquer the arrogance of Mahabali. He asked Mahabali, and Mahabali said, whatever you want, I'll give. He said, okay, you give me three steps that I can, you know, land, that I can measure with my feet. His guru told, don't give. His guru, Sukacharya, told, don't give. This is nothing but Vishnu. It's none other than Vishnu. Don't give. He said, nothing doing, I'm giving. And with one step, he grew, obviously, to Vishwarupa from the Vamana Avatara. With one step, he covered the entire universe. The Ganga step, he covered all the lokas. Then he said, where will I keep my third step? Mahabali, he said, keep it on my head. So he destroyed his ego. So Vamana, the Vamana avatara, Pramshuhu. Oh, you see, he says Vamana and Pramshuhu. Pramshuhu means really the tallest, the high, the maximum that you can imagine. So, Vamana as well as Pramshuhu. You have to talk in the language of contradiction when you talk about the pure consciousness. Sadhure, Sadvantike, Antarasya, Sarvasya. This is how the Upanishad talks. Inside, it's outside. So you will say, are you beside? Is it inside or outside? We think like that. But something that is all pervading, how can you say inside or outside? This inside outside business is from our level. See, this is the problem. The moment mind comes, you will talk in these languages. Inside, outside, tall, short, and all that. Like when you travel in space, there is no upar, niche, nothing like that. In space. Only from our earth, when we discuss, then upar, niche, all that comes. Similarly, we are trying to understand something beyond the mind through the mind. This is the problem. So they will have to talk in the language of contradiction, opposites. So Vamana, the short boy, and Pramshuhu, one of great height. So the Anuhu is also, in Anu, the subtlest is there. In the biggest, he is there. There is no place that he is not. So, the shortest is also Vishnu. The tallest is also Vishnuhu. Pramshuhu. Amogaha. Amogha means one whose act does not go in vain. In Tamil they say, Amogamar. How is your business going? Means Amogha. Means fruitful. Successful. Your efforts don't go waste. So, Mahavishnu's effort doesn't go waste. Which means, when you identify with the Atma, your efforts don't go waste. Because when you, the moment you identify with Atma, do your actions, you will be objective. It may not be seen as bringing success today. Somewhere it brings success. See, when you sow the seeds in the earth, it may not sprout immediately, but at some point it will sprout. It is going to bless somebody or the other in future. It won't go waste. So, Amogha. The moment you identify with the Atma, such good thoughts, that's what he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nai Kalyanakrit Kaschit Durgatim Tata Gacchati. Verse number 40 of chapter 6. Our efforts that is done in the direction of the Atma will not go waste. Impossible. So Amogha. Suchihi. One who purifies those who adore and praise him. Suchi means pure. See, when there is only one, there is nothing else mixing with it. Where is the question of impurity? Pure gold cannot be made into an ornament. So they mix little copper and then bring out the ornament. So it's actually impure gold. Copper is mixed in it. Pure gold, there's nothing else other than the gold in it. Similarly, pure consciousness is what is there. There's nothing else other than the pure consciousness. Therefore, it is suchihi, pure. There is no otherness. There is nothing else other than Vishnu. It is ekam. It is anekam. It is one, it is many. It is that which alone exists. Brahman alone exists. Brahma satyam. Brahman alone exists. There is nothing else other than Brahman. It is suchihi. Then urjitaha, one of infinite strength. See, real strength is when there is zero dependence. Immense strength. You have tremendous strength when you are not dependent on anybody. You're self-reliant, you are the strongest. So Mahavishnu doesn't depend on anybody. Everybody else depends on Vishnu. Devas, go to Vishnu. Vishnu doesn't go to anybody else. So therefore, one who is Urjita, immense strength. He is the real source of everything and absolutely independent of everything. Atindraha. One who transcends Indra, knows beyond the God of gods. Now, Atindra also means Indra represents mind. Devas represents the senses. So Indra represents the mind. Atindra means one who is beyond the senses and mind. That's what it means. Whenever we say Indra, it means the mind. Mind is the lord of the senses, which is the devas, the illumining factors. So, Atindra means what? It is even beyond Indra, beyond the mind. Mind itself borrows its sentiency from the consciousness. So, you know, you are in mind. What is mind? Mind is nothing but flow of thoughts. So you are conscious of thoughts. That consciousness which makes you be conscious of thoughts is the pure consciousness which is beyond the mind and sense. So Atindraha, Sangraha, one who is of the subtle form of the universe which is to be created. Sangraha. So also it means Samgraha. Also means one who is the withdrawer of all during pralaya. During pralaya, he is the one who withdraws everything. Sangraha. It's the universe that has come in the gross form that gets withdrawn into the subtle form. And again from subtle form, it comes back to gross form. So this is what is going on. Sargaha. Sargaha means the very creator. The creator of this universe. Being the universe or the cause of the universe. That's what it means. Sarga. Dhritatma. One who is ever in his inherent form or nature without the transformation involved in birth and death. Changeless entity. That's what it means. Instead of getting confused with what the interpretation you see here. Dhritatma means the firm self. Dhriti. Firm. Other is constantly shifting, changing. Mind is wavering. Atma is firm, changeless. Mind is that which constantly changes. Atma is changeless. That's what it means. Vritatma. So the more and more you get closer and closer to the self, you will find this quality of dhriti in you. Decisive. Confusion which is brought about by the mind will be gone. There will be more clarity in your life as such. Niyamaha. One who appoints his creatures in particular stations. What it means is, he not only created this universe, but he appointed the devas to take care of things accordingly. It's like, you know, when the new government takes over, the new party wins and comes to power, then they all take the oath, not so the prime minister, and then he has got his own ministers appointed, each one given a particular portfolio, and then they take care. Like that, this entire universe, there is niyama, there's an order here. It's a beautiful cosmos. It's not a chaos. Isn't it? So, everything is beautifully set in particular order. That's what he means. Niyama. One who appoints his creatures in particular stations. Yamaha. One who regulates all remaining within them. Having appointed the directors, he says, he's sitting inside them and controller as controller. As the indweller, he is the one who is Yama. Yama means controller. That's why Lord of Death is called Yama. He is doing a fantastic job. If Lord Yama is not there, nobody dies, then what will happen? There won't be any space. There won't be any place on earth. So everything is being beautifully controlled. Morning dies, noon born. Noon dies, evening born. Evening dies, night born. Night dies, morning born. Seasons change. The seasonal changes are necessary. They're all needed. If the seasons don't change, the sustenance of earth will be difficult. So therefore, everything is beautifully controlled. He is the one who is Niyama, he is the one who is Yama. Both. So therefore, Mahavishnu is the one who is the controller and director of this universe. Yama and Niyama. Next. Vedyo vaidya sada yogi viraha madhavo madhu atindriyo mahamayo mahottako mahabalaha. Vedyo vaidya sada yogi viraha madhavo madhu atindriyo mahamayo mahottako mahabalaha. Vedyaha. Veda means knowledge. Vedya means the knowable, that which is to be known. Everything else is useless. One who has to be known by those who aspire for moksha. The one thing that clearly needs to be known is Brahman. I've given this example many times. I'll repeat it once again. If a person is lost in the desert with no mobile phone, no nothing, how would he get back? How would he get back to his city?
Following the sun.
Following the sun, correct. He knows that the direction in which the sun rises is the east. So the moment he knows that, he knows all other directions. West, north, south, northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest. He knows. So one thing that is to be known is, who am I? Who the heaven am I? Let's put it positively. Who is this I? We live in this world as if that has been answered. That is the problem. We have accepted this identity. We have accepted this identity, and that's the problem. Like, you know, you are constantly being hypnotized to believe that you are so-and-so. And you don't question it. And there is a certain comfort that is there in not questioning. So, out of that intellectual laziness, you don't question. And why you want to ask all these questions? Simply, world is there, eat, enjoy, maja karo. Unnecessarily doing all. But the problem is, it's like something that gets into your teeth. Though you do not want to really be bothered about it, it goes on bothering. Like a thorn embedded in your flesh. Even though you do not want to think about it, it keeps on nagging. So like that, this is there. Because you really don't know who you are. And on top of it, you think you know who you are. You have got some identity. This is the problem. So therefore, really speaking, what is to be known? In the Upanishad, the student goes to the guru and says, What is that to be known, knowing which nothing else remains to be known? We are knowing everything, or we want to know everything. Go on and on and on, trying to gain the knowledge of the things and beings in this world. We do not know who we essentially are, what our real identity is. We don't question this identity. This person who is supposed to have been born, growing, and then perishing one day. Who is this? Who am I? Am I this individual? So therefore he says, Vedyaha. Mahavishnu is the one to be known. Because the moment you know that, what happens is, you understand that this is tamasha, a condition. Instantly, you've conquered death. It's an instant moksha. Thereafter, there will be nothing in this world that can create fear in you. Thereafter, you will not play the game of life to win. Because for you, winning or losing is a game that children play. You just play the game. You neither play to win nor you play to lose. Just enjoy. You play the game of life. So, Vedya, know that. Once you know that, it is the Vishnu which has become many. Ekatu Rama, Anekatu Rama. It is the one Vishnu who has become this many manifestations. Once you know that, then the world cannot affect you. And you will be the boss of this world. It's like, you know, with freedom you live. I don't know if any day or any time you tried this. Without a purpose, you just go somewhere. You know, whichever direction you go, you go. Supposing you continue like that for a day or two, you feel that there's no responsibility, nothing, let's say. For 2 days you decided, you told, I am not to be contacted. Nobody can contact me because I have no mobile phone. You will feel that there is nothing, there's so much weight removed from your shoulders. A freedom that you enjoy. That freedom you get the moment you know your true nature. You are not, how could I say? Because you have to carefully choose the words. You are not burdened by any responsibility. I was about to say you have no responsibility, which is a true statement, but it can be misunderstood. So it's safer to say this. You are unburdened by any responsibility. Vedyaha. Vaidyaha. One who knows all vidyas are branches of knowledge. See, Vaidya means who? Vaidya is the one who cures. So, Vaidyaha, knower of all knowledge. One who knows all vidyas are branches of knowledge. What it means is, it's not that if you understood Vedanta, you will become a great physics teacher, because you know everything in physics, you know everything in chemistry. Vaidyaha, in the sense, it cures you of all samsara. The moment you know that this entire world is nothing but that one Brahman, then the samsara, you are cured of any samsara, any changes. So you know that the changeless substratum is the base for all the changes. That you know. Once you know that, instantly you are cured of all problems. Once you know that Waker's mind is the supporter of the entire dream, then the happenings on the dream cannot have any effect on you. So Vaidya means one supreme doctor. That is Vishnu. When you understand the reality, instantly you are cured. Instantly you are cured. It cures you of all the problems that you've been suffering for janmas together. See, you may be in dream for hours together, but the moment you open your eyes, the entire dream dissolves. So, Vedyo Vaidya. So, once you know the all-knowing principle, it cures you of the samsara that you've been suffering almost eternally. Sada Yogi. Vedyo Vaidya Sada Yogi. Sada means always. Yogi means always united. Eternal yogi. One who is always awake. What it means. So when a person is united with the Atma, he is always awake. Always awake doesn't mean he is suffering from not being able to sleep, you know, insomnia, nothing like that. Sada Yogi, always united. Once you become the waker, thereafter you cannot fall into the same dream. Not possible. As far as that dream is concerned, it's completely folded. So once you gain the self, you are Sada Yogi. Sada Yogi means what? You are united. In our case, when we are studying the scriptures, when we are reading these namas, we relatively feel good. And we think we have conquered the world. Nothing can affect us. But the moment we stop the studying and get back to our contact with the world, what happens? From the state of yogi, we become boogie. But that's not the case with the person who is established in the Atma. So he says, Sada Yogi. Once woken up, you are always a yogi. Viraha. Viraha is the 166th Nama. The slayer of the demons, asuras. Why does he do that? To protect righteousness. So to protect righteousness, it destroys the asura. See, how would you understand these namas? Vedyo, Vaidya, Sada Yogi, Viraha. So when you are constantly united with the self means you are 24/7 in the state of awareness. That's what it means. When you are 24/7 in the state of awareness, you are Achyuta, one who never falls. So, there is no weak moment in your life where you give in and fall. So, the objects and beings of this world can never trap you. That's what it means. That's why you will find in the shastras, in the stories, it is mentioned that Vishwamitra fell for Menaka. And as far as our Swamiji is concerned, he never interprets that Vishwamitra fell for Menaka. I used to wonder in the beginning, he said, what is this? The entire, wherever I heard the story, Vishwamitra fell for Menaka. But Swamiji says, no, he could have taken care of 25 trillion Menakas. But he purposely allowed to show us that a person like Vishwamitra can fall. What is your state or my state? Your city or our city, you know. To educate it like that is a conscious. So in other words, the reason that Swamiji interprets it that way, because once a person wakes up, forget self-realization, even to a certain height, impossible to fall into the earlier lower states. It's impossible. Not possible. See, in the Shakespeare's portrayal of Desdemona, he, you know, when Othello abuses her, and she says, am I that name, Iago? Am I that name? Iago is asking, what name? She can't say that. Othello used a certain word. She can't repeat it. But she says, am I that me? Am I that me? What name? What name? Asked Iago. And Emilia, Iago's wife, she says, Othello called her so-and-so name. So what Shakespeare is trying to say is, Desdemona is too refined to use that name. Once you reach a certain level of refinement, impossible to fall into that level again. Impossible. So therefore, Swamiji says, Vishwamitra fell doesn't make sense. He cannot fall. A person who's reached that height, impossible to fall. But they are purposely allowing the whole thing to go like that to show that you better be careful with your senses. Don't play with your senses. Not easy. So therefore, Viraha, one who destroys all asuras, in the sense, once a person reaches that state of awareness, thereafter impossible for that person to fall into the hands of desire. Impossible. Not at all possible. So, we being at the level of delusion, cannot judge a person who is in the level of awareness. It may appear as if they fell, you know. Impossible. If a person has reached that state, impossible to fall. That's why he says, Sadayohi, Sadayogi, Viraha. It's always a Viraha. Like Mahavir. Once conquered means conquered. Ma Davaha, one who is the master of Ma, Lakshmi. You understand? Ma Davaha. Ma Davaha means the husband of Lakshmi. What it means. Lakshmi, Durga, Saraswati, all are different rupas of that one Devi. So therefore, Madhava is interpreted here as a lot of knowledge. So, Madhava, one who is the lord of Lakshmi, wealth, the real wealth is wisdom. See, you give money to a fool, he will destroy himself. It's like giving potassium cyanide to a fool. He would want to taste it to make sure what it is, and he'll kill himself. So, the real wealth is knowledge. And knowledge means objective. Detachment. The other side of it is detachment. So, Madhavaha, the lord of knowledge, the lord of wealth, objective, Madhuhu. Madhuhu literally means honey. What is the opposite of honey? Bitterness. What makes your life bitter? Anybody? What makes our life bitter? What makes our life bitter?
Our wants.
Your wants, okay.
Discontentment.
Expectations.
Discontentment. Anything else?
Frustrations.
Happy experiences.
I'm happy.
Resentment.
Your question was that why do we get bitter?
What makes our life bitter?
Resentment.
Expectation.
All these are not
from
wrong.
Others.
The root. The moment you go to the root, it is nothing but the ego.
But what?
Ego.
Ego.
Mera. Me. Mine. Me and mine. The moment me and mine comes, life becomes bitter. You remove the me and mine by diluting it with a larger purpose. Instantly you will find joy. See, you find a child, supposing, they are distributing chocolates and children are taking chocolates. And you go there and say, can I have one chocolate from you? You ask the child. The child says, no, I will not give. Immediately you will see the face frowning. There is another child who's probably put the chocolate inside the mouth. But when you said, can I have the chocolate? And the child immediately puts the fingers into the mouth to take the chocolate out to give it to you. You will find a smile in the child. When you grab, when you hold, when you aggrandize, for me and my fraternity, the future, the I and mine, the me and mine and my, the possessiveness, it comes instantly, it becomes big. See, why do relationships become soft? It's the possessiveness. It that destroys relationships. This is the problem. We are not able to relate without possessiveness. In fact, there are 6 reasons that Swamiji talks about in the book, Fall of the Human Intellect for Marriage. Out of that one thing he talks about is possessiveness. People have this weakness to possess. So, I must possess a wife. I must possess a husband. I must possess children. The moment possessiveness comes, you don't enjoy it. The moment possessiveness comes in the relationship, it's gone. That's it. You have reduced the being into a possession, into an object. And the essence of every being is Atma, which is free. So nobody can be in an environment where they are being possessed. Or somebody is trying to possess them. Come on, yeah. He said, my God, it's becoming a big problem. Why? Possessiveness. The me and mine destroys the life. This is the problem. So the small m, me, should be escalated to the capital M, me. Which is what? The whole thing, Ishwara. The moment you say Ishwara, who is Ishwara? The cosmic being, then. So from this limited being, you go to the cosmic being. So what this Vedanta is saying is, the center of the cosmic being and the center of this individual being is the same, which is pure consciousness. Like, water is the same in wave, in the froth can form in waves in the entire ocean. It is all nothing but water. The total collection is called ocean. The individual is called wave. But essentially it is called water. This is Vedanta. Advaita Vedanta. So the more and more I enhanced my circle of identification from just me to a family, to a community, to a country, to the whole universe, including all the species, you find that the joy in your life increasing. The moment you shrink to the small yam, bitterness. So, Madhuhu, the self, it's an expansion. The moment you've expanded, you find joy in it. Your life is joy, joyful. So, any time you are experiencing bitterness, unhappiness, means something wrong with you, your identity. You have identified, you become selfish, self-centered, egoistic, possessive. Something is there. It's impossible. You may give some other reason, that fellow, this fellow, politician, bureaucrat, economic policies, this, that. So many things you will give. But you go deep and see, this is the problem. Inside. What is it? Madhu, honey. Lord gives you joy just like honey. What do you mean by Lord gives you joy? Emotionally you can say, yeah, yeah, God comes and gives us joy all the time, he'll give joy. What it means is the moment you become aware, you would drop all your pettiness. Simple as chilliness. Children, like last week I said, he took my pencil, took my pen, my eraser been taken by this fellow Swamiji. Like that only we are talking. Pettiness. That we don't grow out of that. The more and more knowledge goes in it. Like, I think it's Maurice Maeterlinck. His name is Maurice Maeterlinck. He says, happy and blessed hour, H-O-U-R, is when wickedness stands forth revealed as goodness bereft of a diet. We get into this judging and you find these people who are constantly judging others. They are very unhappy. Well, you understand that in this universe, all kinds of gunas are there. So you got to be aware of that. You can't be naive. But that doesn't mean you're constantly judging. In spite of all the actions that Othello did against Desdemona with jealous and all that. Desdemona was much more happy. Othello was the one who was sad. So the moment you shrink into this nonsense, ego, the possessiveness, it comes as aggrandizing, grabbing, you find your life's joy is robbed. When we were growing up as children, these things were not that we were enjoying. Absolute joy. The moment the separate feeling came, I am separate, then the whole thing starts. So Madhu, honey, Atindriyaha. Again the same thing. One who is not knowable by the senses. Beyond Indriyas, beyond the senses and the mind. Mahamaya. One who can cause illusion even over other great illusions. Mayavi, he is called as Mayavi because he is there yet he is hiding himself. When you see this universe, how much ever we study, what happens, like the poem Pineapple and the Bee says, the sight our foolish heart inflames. We forget everything what we are studying and we go gaga over the worldly objects and beings. So Mahamaya, a great illusion. This illusion is played over us and we are all overpowered by this Maya. Ishvara is the one who controls Maya, whereas we are controlled by Maya. So Mahamaya, one who can cause illusion even over the great illusions, even they are overpowered by this Maya. Behold my yoga maya. Though everywhere, not available for the senses and the mind, and the senses and the mind sees the object and develops desire and is caught in the samsara. So that is the maya. You are studying about it, still you will continue to be in maya. That's the power. Mahotsaha. One who is ever busy in the work of creation, sustenance and dissolution. Utsaha. Saha. Mahotsaha. Means enthusiasm. See, this is something that we need to understand. A lot of people say, why are you going to Vedanta? You will become useless. You will stop acting. This is the idea people have about spiritual people. And that's the idea the so-called spiritual people have given to the world also. Spiritual fellow, not interested in anything, simply sitting, bare minimum, I'm okay. While simplicity is different, but the way it has been portrayed, nobody wants to get into Vedanta. Oh my God, Vedanta, why so early? Young fellow, gone into Vedanta, give up everything. You know, in a sense, it's like they imagine a rotten apple. Like a fresh apple, you had so much of energy. You know, going to spirituality means you became like a rotten apple. This is what they think. Whereas he says, mahotsa, constant, creation, maintenance, destruction, constant work is going. Recently, one of my colleagues sent me the video of Swamiji driving the car from Pune to Bombay. Just 2 days ago. Swamiji is 94 years old. He drives the car even now. He just went through an operation. I am only giving that to say that when a person becomes spiritual, he will be dynamic yet relaxed. This combination is spirituality. Please understand. That's why we say in Vedanta, which Swami Ramtita said, intense work is rest. A person who is really at rest can only be doing intensive work. So, the self is behind this universe which is constantly manifesting, constantly going into unmanifestation and again manifesting. So, that enthusiasm will be there in a person who is spiritual. Mahotsa. So utsaha, you know, that energy. Why we do not have the energy? Because all our energies are dissipated in the unproductive channels of worries of the past, anxieties of the future, this, that. A person who has realized self has no past, no future, nothing. No dissipation of energy. The energy is fully available. The body is tired, automatically he goes to sleep like a child. Children have no worries of the past, anxieties of the future. There's constantly so much energy. And the body is tired, they just lie down, sleep. Within seconds, they fall off. So there is so much of enthusiasm in Vishnu. So he says, Mahotsa, Mahabala, Balam, strength. Mahabala means the most powerful. Mahavishnu is the most powerful. He controls Maya, like I told you. One who controls Maya, which controls the entire species, is Mahabalaha, no? The strongest among all who have strength. See, our strength, you remember the Keno Upanishad, my job is easy. The powerful Agni Bhagavan, the powerful Vayu Bhagavan, became powerless in front of Atma. Why? Because if the Atma is in enlivening, the Vayu Bhagavan to toss up everything. The Atma who is enlivening, the Agni Bhagavan to burn everything. So then, the real power in us is Vishnu. So therefore, he says, the strongest among who have strength. Real strength is independence. All other is not strength at all. So therefore, he says, Mahottaha Mahabala. So we'll stop with this Nama, 172nd Nama. We'll take up the next Namas next week. If you have any question, please ask. Otherwise, we can conclude.
So, is there a way to practice getting the strength of not getting affected?
By gaining the knowledge and leading a lifestyle which helps you to gain the knowledge. If you, I'll just give a gross example. Now, my lifestyle is teaching Vedanta. Main purpose. Okay. So I need to make sure that I lead my all other aspects of life which is helpful for me to continue in this lifestyle. So when you say how I can become really strong, only knowledge. So therefore you lead a lifestyle. If whatever you eat, whomsoever you relate with constantly, your friends and family, choose them. There may be few acquaintances, that's different. But choose those activities and aspects of each and every aspect of life, which will help you to gain this knowledge. Because that knowledge alone can give you strength. Your dependence will reduce once the knowledge is digested. So, supposing you are choosing a particular type of food which is making you drowsy, you are not going to be able to take the knowledge. So, then that becomes no to you. So, how to become strong by gaining knowledge? So, therefore, choose everything that will help you to gain this knowledge. Lead or create or change your lifestyle in such a way that will help you to gain this knowledge. Only that can confer strength in you. Because only that will remove your dependence on it. Dependence on children, dependence on spouse, dependence on wealth, dependence on the power, name, fame, everything. Everything will be taken away from you one day. When everything is lost, still you are remaining strong. Why? Because you are rooted in the knowledge.
Is that possible?
It is possible by digesting the knowledge. Otherwise not possible. To the extent, it's possible. Why not?
Because with the socio fabrics and people changing and...
But nothing to do with socio fabric. It's to do with your sincere effort. When things change, there are different people, right? As I say, when the going gets strong, the strong gets going. You usually quote this statement very often. Written everywhere. What do you mean by when the going gets strong, the strong gets going? Means what? What does it mean? A strong fellow goes through all the difficulties. Weak fellow gets washed away. What is the strength? When you have the objectivity, knowledge and detachment. What is detachment? Nothing but knowledge. Understanding all these are passing, fleeting stuff. So this name, pain, all you don't bother.
No, can I give an example? of what I'm talking. Can I give an example of what I'm talking about?
Please.
So we are brought up in the same environment with the same family. With you pick up your friends, you think they're alike, everything. And then suddenly you see in a social fabric when you go out or when you're talking to them, the respect that you feel that an individual deserves doesn't come up. As in, they start talking about that, you know, the M people or about Muslims. So I feel that there is nothing like they now address Muslims as M people. They don't even have the decency to call them whatever. And I just feel that every individual has its own good and bad. So why put a community and label the whole community as bad and label another whole community which is not always so good as fantastic, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what everything. Is that correct? And then the government, of course, sides one over another. Like an example of this comedian who performed at the Kennedy, whatever, how badly he was treated or misunderstood. While he said only good things about India and factual things about India. So if these things perturb you, is there a way to
nothing will perturb
balance
you.
That out?
No. See, what we are talking about two things here. Let's not get into this issue. I'll come to that issue later. But first the thing is, first thing that you need to understand is, you command respect. You don't demand respect from anybody. How do you command respect? Who commands respect? One who lives the knowledge. One who lives the principles. And understanding that there will be people who praise you today will tomorrow go to the opposite camp. That possible. Not that you keep expecting such a thing to happen. But it's possible. Things keep changing. So why you demand respect from anybody? You command respect. And when somebody is throwing mud, it only shows their character, whether it's an individual or a group of people. Now, many times I find we are, see, especially you talked about politicians. See.
No. I was talking about general humankind in India. Not just politicians.
I do not.
Everybody, people who we know, even people who I was close to or I am close to, it troubles to see that they don't respect the human being as a human being and just put him in a box because he or she is a particular religion. Why is that? And you need to accept that?
In short, what you're saying is, they are not living up to the level of a human being should be living. That is bothering you. Why? You understand that there are so many people who are born as human beings, but they are yet to become a human being. See, we have studied in Vedanta Treatise book. It's there. There is vegetable man, animal man. Before vegetable man, there is mineral man. Then there is vegetable man. Then there is human man. Sorry, animal man. Then there is human man. Then God man. Not God-man in the sense of this God-man thing that is going on. I'm not talking about that. The God-man meaning self-realized soul. Like Lord Buddha, Lord Mahavira. That's a evolved soul to that height. You understand? Where, like Jesus Christ said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Because fellows are crucifying him. And he's saying, Father, forgive them. That's a very different level of a human growth. So, it's your mistake to think everybody is human beings, just because they are born as human beings. Yeah, probably they are not yet grown. They may be educated. In fact, they are not educated. They are literates. Truly educated beings will be different. You understand? So, it's your fault to think that just because somebody is born as a human species, he should be like Jesus Christ. So, you make a mistake and then you are blaming them. It only shows their character. See, when you play golf, your ball goes into the bush and nobody is seeing. Do you take your shot from the bush or you take a ball to the, fairway and then hit the shot? That shows your character. Nobody seeing. Okay, let me put the ball in the fairway and then hit the shot. Okay, that's fine. But your character is strong. You say, no, the ball has gone into the bush. I will take the shot from there.
Or take a drop.
That's what. So, that's what it is. So, when things go like this, that shows their character. So, if you understand it like that, you will not be affected. If you don't understand, then you will get affected. But the problem here is, you are getting affected and you are blaming them. No. You are getting affected because you did not have the correct assessment. This is knowledge. They are behaving the way their level is. But if you assess correctly, you will not be affected. So what I am trying to say is, your affectation is because of your lack of knowledge, your lack of assessment or wrong assessment.
It has nothing to do with
their behavior. So if you have knowledge, then understand, okay, there are tigers in the human form, buffaloes in the human form. I may be a buffalo also in certain areas. So once I understand that, I won't get affected. Otherwise, it will be terribly affected. So that's why I said, to gain the knowledge to that extent, you will not get.
Thank you.
That doesn't mean you will put up with all the nonsense. You do whatever you can to bring about the change. But without getting affected. In fact, a person who is capable of remaining unaffected only can bring about change. Is that okay?
Guruji, you're saying when you are feeling bitter or upset, whenever, meaning there's something you have to question your own self.
Yes. When you're feeling better, when you're feeling bad, bitter.
I have a cold, so it's
the way you deal with the world. World is in a constant flux of change. Friends will turn foes, foes will turn friends. You can't generalize, See, this is some people do this generalization. And it works for them. And inside, if you go, they may know. But externally, they'll come and generalize because they may get votes. This is all the drama they do. Why we get trapped in their thing, We should have the intellect above our shoulders and we should function properly. Should not come under their trap. Many of them are intelligent. Individually, if you see, they'll have their understanding. But when it comes to politics, they'll do all nonsense. Because end of the day, they want votes. You understand? So that's a different thing. Let's not get into that. But I am trying to say that if we really understand, we really have the knowledge, we will not be affected. We will be very clear. In the case of animal kingdom, it's very clear. This is a tiger, this is a buffalo, this is a snake. In the human kingdom, you have to be very careful. All kinds of people are there. But looking outside, I am waiting only for you, they'll say. Inside they'll say, Are Baba, this fellow has come now at this time. Right? No, if you understand, you will not be affected. You will actually feel sorry for their behavior. Like Jesus says, Father, forgive them. They don't know. Because what they don't know is, they are sowing seeds which they will have to reap tomorrow. They are ignorant fellows. So you will only feel sorry for them. Let's conclude now.
Sahana.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti
Shanti Shanti
Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Utyatmanava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayami. Hari Om.